Welcome to Coffee with Kupke, a production of St. Paul Inside the Walls. Here on Coffee with Kupke, we grab a cup of coffee, at least we're claiming this is coffee. We sit with Monsignor Kupke, Raymond Kupke, the pastor of St. Anthony's in Hawthorne, professor at Immaculate Conception Seminary, diocesan archivist. We sit with Monsignor Kupke to delve into the history of Catholicism in the Diocese of Paterson. My name is Father Paul Manning. I am the vicar for evangelization for the Diocese of Paterson. And here I am with Monsignor Kupke. So grab your cup of coffee and let's jump right in. I'm going to take a sip. Monsignor Kupke, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
A little early, but we wanted to make sure that we were able to record the Christmas special to be ready for the week before Christmas.
And you know why this is special?
No.
Because I'm
here and you're here?
Well, but and all of our other broadcasts, you have all the notes on your side, but this time I have the notes on my side. Yeah,
the fact is, I have no idea what the Christmas special is going to be, so this is going to be fun. But I did want to mention our Christmas decor, and Monsignor Kupke and I have been sharing Christmas gifts at least since 1988. Mm. And this is a gift that I received from you.
Right, yeah.
And so where was this from again?
This is from the Tyrol.
The Tyrol is part of
Italy, Austria. The wood carving tradition in the mountains.
And there, it's a beautiful small set. I don't know if you can see it on the screen. Yeah, but
it's one of the rare ones where Mary is shown pregnant.
Yes. And she also can shift. I want to break it now.
If she's of a mind to.
Yeah. Anyway. So, in a previous episode, we talked about Midnight Mass, the history of Midnight Mass, or the history of the suppression of the Midnight Mass.
Right.
So, anything you want to say about that before we?
Well, you know, Christmas, as we all know, is the locus of customs, you know, I mean, family customs, church customs, neighborhood customs. So among the different ethnic groups, you know, the seven fish supper for the Italians, you know, the Simbang Gambi for the Filipinos.
Yes. In some ways, I feel like we're reclaiming some of this.
Yes. Yeah. Los Pastores among the Latinos.
Right.
You know, all of these are ethnic Christmas traditions, and the bowls have probably the strongest one. Because Christmas Eve was a day of fast and abstinence in the old church, so you could not have meat on Christmas Eve.
Yes.
This is the origin of the seven fish supper. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no meat involved in that. So the
bowls, we can't have meat, so let's go crazy with fish.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, don't buy cheap pork. Buy expensive lobster because this is a poor meal. But anyway, so the Poles have this elaborate meal with very specific foods. You know, the Slovaks do too, and the Ukrainians. You know, I tell people that I owe my vocation to it because I dislike the foods at this meal so much. That as soon as I was old enough to drive, I got out of this. You know, my cousins all have memories of this Christmas Eve meal that I don't remember because I was in church as soon as I could get up there because I didn't like any of it.
Oh, wow. Wow. You're not a fish guy.
I'm not a fish guy. You know, mushroom soup was not my favorite.
Gosh, you know, that sounds fantastic.
It wasn't at the time. But anyway. For the Poles, this is a very elaborate, very orchestrated meal that ends up with the whole family walking to church for midnight mass on Christmas. I mean, you can imagine, you know, like on a slightly snowy.
Oh yeah, beautiful.
You know, all the families in Passaic, you know, leaving their homes and walking to Holy Rosary, St. Joe's. You know, it must have looked beautiful.
It's funny in my memory. Christmas is snowy in my childhood. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And maybe it was more so because of changes in the climate, but.
So in 1875, in the Newark Diocese, they banned Midnight Mass on Christmas again because of their concern about drunkenness.
Yeah, yeah.
Fortunately, you know, in our area, by the time the Poles arrive in the 1890s, this has abated somewhat and they don't hit it. But there are other parts of the country where this is a big deal and, you know, it's cited by a number of congregations as part of the reason that they leave communion with Rome and join the PNCC.
Yes.
You know, the
Polish National Catholic. Yeah. So I don't know where you were going to start. Where were you going to start with Christmas?
No, that's fine.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have a number of parishes that have historical memories around Christmas, you know. So you start with Assumption in Morristown, not their current church, but the previous church. The first Mass was on Christmas midnight.
Wow.
And it was not finished yet. This is 1845.
Do you know if
1848,
there was there snow that day?
I don't know. Yeah. But
because Dylan Thomas in his A Child's Christmas in Wales, do you know the beginning? I can never remember if it snowed 3 feet when I was six or 6 feet when I was three.
So they, Bishop McQuaid, who was the pastor at the time, says that basically it was unfinished, but they were so desirous of being in there on Christmas. So they put two barrels with planks between the barrels, and that was the altar.
Oh my, wow.
And, you know, they had midnight Mass in their new church unfinished. Bootin has a similar experience on Christmas Eve in 1846. This is Mount Carmel.
Yeah.
The New Jersey Iron Company announced to its Irish workers that they were giving them a special Christmas bonus by donating a plot of land for them to build a church on.
Wow.
And this is basically the plot of land that they still have today, where Mount Carmel School is today. This is the original plot of land that they were given on Christmas Eve in 1846.
Now, was there a church on that property?
The original church, which later is taken down and moved to Hibernia.
St. Patrick's. Hibernia.
That was on that side of Birch Street.
Yes, and now the church is
now
on the
switched,
other side.
Right. Yeah. And then St. Agnes and Patterson also, their first Mass in their current church was on Christmas Day in 1883. So, you know, a number of places have connections to Christmas that way. But also on a personal basis, you know, the second Bishop of Patterson and our last bishop, Bishop Saritelli, both of whom studied in Rome, the Roman custom was to ordain them just before Christmas.
Okay.
During the December Ember Days.
Yes.
So Saritelli was ordained on December 20th, Boland on December 23rd.
Okay.
You know, so again, a very—
Christmas bishops.
Yeah.
Christmas priests, Christmas bishops.
Christmas priests, right. Yeah. You could say Mass on Christmas.
Oh, yeah. That would be beautiful.
Yeah. It was a whole— And oddly enough, the other one that has connections to Christmas is our cause for canonization, the Benedictine brother.
Marinus
up at St. Paul's Abbey. You know, his famous event of saving this Korean village on his ship, that took place over Christmas. So Christmas was a very important day for him. So all of his monastic events, his entrance into the monastery, his first profession, and his solemn profession all took place at midnight Mass on Christmas.
Oh.
You know, so.
So if you don't know, we do have a potential saint, Brother Marinus, whose name before religion was, it's gone out of my head too.
LaRue is his family name.
Was it Leo or something? Something LaRue.
I forget what it was.
Yeah. But anyway, he was a merchant marine, wasn't he, in the Korean
merchant
War?
Yes.
And ended up on his merchant vessel as the captain, saving
The Meredith Victory, yeah.
Yeah, how many? It's thousands.
5,000.
Unbelievable.
An entire village. Yeah.
So he helped them evacuate?
From north of the DMZ.
Okay.
Around by ship and dumped them off south in what is South Korea today.
Yeah. So that's a Christmas
All of those are Christmas stories.
Did you meet him, Brother Marinus?
Oh, yeah, many times. I think you did, too.
I think I did, yeah.
He was the, you know, in his last assignment, he was in charge of the gift shop at St. Paul's Abbey.
Yes, and we were there.
And we were there many times, yeah.
So Father Pavel Tomczyk of our diocese is working on that cause with Dr. Mary Mazzarella.
Yeah.
Of our Respect Life office. They are very, very involved in this.
It's a tough cause because Marinus was a good religious. He left no paper trail. you know, if they took every single thing he ever wrote and put it together, it would, you know, it would not be as big as my book.
A folder.
Yeah exactly. Yeah,
right. And that's good, right?
Yeah,
for canonization because it gets complicated.
They can't get you for anything.
Yeah, got it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Was he quirky?
Yes.
Yeah. A lot of saints are, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, and then you have places in the diocese that are somewhat connected to Christmas. For example, obviously, Bethlehem Center in Chester.
Yes. You know, so the Bethlehem Hermitage. Again, I don't know if you know that we have a diocesan hermitage, and it's a diocesan community of hermits.
Hermits, right. A Laura
of hermits in Chester, and you can actually go on retreat there. You can spend time in your own little hermitage, in silence in the woods.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It's not too far from where you grew up.
Actually, there's an old railroad bed that you can take from my house, the house I grew up in, to the Laura.
So they obviously, you know, by name and devotion, you know, to the Bethlehem and the heart of Jesus, you know, the silence of Bethlehem, you know, Christmas is obviously their patronal feast day. And
in fact, it's worth visiting the chapel
around Christmas,
looking at the iconography, which is just stunning. Yeah. So that was founded by one of our diocesan priests who asked permission from Bishop Rodimer or Bishop Casey.
Yeah.
So Father Gene Romano became the first and only Desert Father, I think, right?
Well, I think there might be one there now.
Okay, yeah. So anyway, he worked on the rule and created the community and oversaw the building of all the hermitages.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a pretty amazing local story.
Yeah. And then you have the just up the street from where we are right now, the Carmel in Morristown. Was also founded during Christmas week.
Wow.
So every year they have the bishop up there between Christmas and New Year's to celebrate their anniversary.
Now, did you have, when I said to you, let's do a Christmas special, and I said, you said, let me think about it, did all of these Christmas connections suddenly come to mind? Or did you have to, this seems like you would have had to do a lot of research to find these dates.
You know, I would sit there in front of the TV late at night with my piece of paper, and I would remember different pieces, and then I would organize them, you know.
So Monsignor Kupke is a multitasker par excellence. So we lived together at St. Peter's in Parsippany. He's also a night owl, but he would be on the phone, working on his computer, watching the news, and talking to me all at the same time. Okay, so sorry.
Yeah.
So next Christmas.
Right.
Next Christmas.
And the other one that has an interesting connection, although the place is gone now, but the Missionary Sisters of the Immaculate Conception, who had a place in West Patterson in Woodland Park.
Oh, was it up
on
the hill?
Top of the hill by Tom Brock?
Didn't we used to televise Mass from there?
Yes, right. So back in the days before Vatican II, when the 40 hours devotion was not only popular, but almost required. You know, the diocese would actually lay out a program of 40 hours, a calendar, so that every weekend was covered somewhere in the diocese.
Wow.
All through the whole year. And Tom Brock volunteered for Christmas. So they had 40 hours devotion on Christmas Day.
And Tom Brock was what?
It was their college, their mother house, their you know, the estate where they had their chapel at all.
Wow.
You know, basically today I think it's Berkeley Business College. But
oh, yeah, I've seen the sign. Yeah.
So they also had a connection. You know, they liked to do their Eucharistic adoration over Christmas. The other one, you know, is one of the most popular local Christmas customs is the giant Christmas tree at Rockefeller Center in Manhattan.
Of course.
And our diocese gave the tree one year when they spied a tree on the property of the Sisters of Christian Charity.
At I remember this.
And they asked for the tree, and the nuns, you know, did
deliberated.
It up.
Deliberated,
As, you know, they had a ceremony of goodbye to the tree.
Yes, and, they probably named the tree.
Blessed the tree, and then they cut down
and
the tree.
And then they sacrificed the tree.
Yes, and then the tree made it through the tunnel to Manhattan, and then all the nuns went to Rockefeller Center.
I remember this. This wasn't that long ago.
No, it's probably about 20 years ago.
Yeah, I think I was at Morris Catholic at the time, perhaps.
So there's been a number of, you know, local church connections to Christmas.
Probably, can I jog your memory? Do you remember anything about St. Luke's in Long Valley? So my recollection is that I was a seminarian there, but I think for their first Christmases, because they were borrowing space, they celebrated Christmas in one of the local barns in Long Valley, an actual barn,
this
big barn.
Peter Duty's idea.
Yes, Father Peter Duty. And in the midst of, I think, some farm animals and bales of hay.
Good Shepherd in Andover has a similar, you know, when they were, before they were in their church, they borrowed the Old Mill Inn. In Andover there.
Yeah.
And on one of their early Christmas Eves, they had live animals. And,
Okay. Yeah. Liturgically.
You get very creative at Christmas.
Yeah, that's true.
It would be interesting someday to poll all the priests of the diocese and see what they do on Christmas Eve liturgically, because there's no, you know, there's nothing in the books about Christmas Eve. There's nothing about how baby Jesus gets into the crib.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, and I suspect.
And we all do that. Some
I suspect
procession.
That it's you know, it's like handed down priest to priest.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, like whatever your pastor did,
that's
or your home pastor did.
Right.
You do that, and then you pass it on to the next guy.
Yeah, that's right. So I just want to be a little bit conscious of time. So you. I want you to tell
well, the
us.
One thing I was going to say is that in some ways, our diocese is a Christmas diocese because we were founded on the 9th of December in 1937.
Right. Yeah.
But it really wasn't announced. My understanding is that the locals got word of it on Saturday morning, the 11th of December.
Yes.
So even though Christmas was only 2 weeks away, literally, they had to stop everything and suddenly appoint a committee of preparation before Christmas to get going because they only had X amount of time to fix the cathedral, start organizing things, find a chancery office, all of the stuff that you need to do when you start off a diocese.
Wow.
And, you know, they... Even though they all had something else to do,
because
it was 2 weeks before Christmas, still they had to like stop it and say, all right, you're on the committee, we're going to have a meeting on December 20th or whatever it is.
Boy, oh boy, wow. But given the fact that we're a Christmas diocese, in some sense, we all ought to be conscious of Christmas every day, right?
Yeah. The other time it came was when Joe Brestel died.
Monsignor Joe Brestel, vicar general.
And the first priest of the diocese.
Oh, yes,
I forgot that. He was the first one ordained for the diocese, but he died on December 22nd. And they decided to have his funeral on Christmas Eve. You know, they didn't wait till
I was
after.
There. I was there. Yeah.
I know. And we were all there.
That. I forgot that.
We were all there. And this is before the Passaic County parking garage was built.
Yes.
So the police closed down DeGrasse Street and it became a parking lot for all the priests. You know,
yeah.
I remember looking around and saying to myself, you know, this is a great tribute to Brestel's popularity. We all have something else to do this morning because it's
Christmas
Eve,
there,
but we're all here.
It's reminiscent of the magnitude of McNulty's funeral.
Yeah, exactly. You know, everybody's minds were somewhere else on Christmas. Yeah, you know, what I still have to do between now and 4 o'clock, but nonetheless, everybody was there for him.
My big recollection of that funeral is when it came time to take his casket out.
Yeah.
How they lifted the casket onto their shoulders.
Lift,
You don't see that often.
No.
Yeah.
Well, in many churches, you wouldn't be able to do it.
Yeah.
But in the cathedral, there's enough room, enough clearance that you...
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So any anecdotes that you want to... wrap up with?
Just two from, you know, the archives. Again, they're kind of tearjerker anecdotes.
Uh-oh.
But, you know, they probably work for Christmas, you know.
If any of you know Kupke's tearjerkers, you might need tissues. He might need tissues.
He might need it. So we have a lovely picture of Our Lady of Mercy in Whippany. Mm. Not the current church, but the chapel, you know, when it was still the church. And it's all decorated for Christmas. You know, that's such a small space.
Yes.
I cannot imagine how they got all of this in there, you know. But over on the right, when you look at the picture, this is in the middle of World War II. Mm. So they have a banner up with two stars on it because there are two boys in the parish overseas fighting in the war. So they wanted to make sure that they remembered them in church at Christmas. And so their banner is part of the decoration.
Mm.
The other one is from my many Montville stories.
You know? Yes.
Joe Meyer, the founding pastor of St. Pius X in Montville, when he went away, this is Meyer's German mentality. It was very precise, you know. So when he went away to the high school seminary, he lived in western Pennsylvania, and he went to the Josephinum in Ohio.
Okay.
So as he's leaving to start freshman year in high school.
And was he studying for our diocese at that point?
No, you could go to the Josephinum without
and pick up
a diocese.
Got it. And it was high school, did you say?
Well, you could go from high school through theology there.
Yeah.
They had all three, high school, college.
Okay.
So he reasons that he's never going to be home for Christmas again because—
As a priest.
The seminarians don't go home for Christmas. And then once you're ordained, you know, he would be in New Jersey. It's an 8-hour trip to western Pennsylvania even today.
Yes.
So he figured he would never be home again for Christmas. So he gave his mother as a gift, in lieu of his presence, a nativity crèche.
Mm.
Not a tiny one, but a decent-sized one. You know. So 30 years later, when he becomes the founding pastor of Montville, and they're having their first Christmas Mass in the barn at Montville.
Oh.
She sends it back to him.
Wow.
As the nativity scene for the church. And it remained so up until, you know, like 10 years ago when they bought a new big set.
But, yes.
You know, it was an interesting little Christmas.
Yeah, beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful. I'm kind of thinking of the end of Bing Crosby, Barry Fitzgerald.
Yeah.
When
My Way.
Yeah, and
The bells of St. Mary's.
Yeah, and his mother shows up at the end.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, my gosh.
Exactly.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for joining us for the Coffee with Kupke Christmas special. And maybe just to finish, we can take a silent moment, and then Monsignor Kupke, maybe you could bless us.
May Christ's coming as man at Christmas be a source of blessing for you and your families. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit.
Amen. Amen. See you next time.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Let's leave it there. I want all of you who are listening or watching to make sure that you keep an eye out or an ear out for the next episode of Coffee with Kupke. In order to stay on top of new releases, make sure you follow or subscribe wherever you're listening. And if you are on YouTube, please do drop a like and hit the bell for notifications. While you're at it, make sure to check out the other shows produced by the diocese. Those shows are Beyond the Beacon, hosted by Bishop Kevin Sweeney and Jay Agnish, our Director of Communications, and The Paul Street Journal, hosted by Brian Hansberger and Freddie Garcia. I want to give a special thanks to Joe Genexi, our sound and visual engineer, Caitlin Ferrari, who's involved in pre- and post-production, and Freddie Garcia, who's helping out with this podcast in addition to doing his own. With all that said, I just want to thank you for joining us in Coffee with Kupke. Keep making Catholic history in the Diocese of Paterson.